Okay, good afternoon. As you can hear, English is not my first language. So I'll have to be a little bit more attached to my slides, but I hope you'll be able to understand using your visual and auditory senses. Okay, so I really have nothing to disclose. And virtual reality entails the use of advanced technologies to produce a simulated environment that users perceive as comparable to real life. Users interact with displayed images, move and manipulate virtual objects, and perform other actions in a way that engenders a feeling of actual presence and immerses their senses in the simulated environment. And we should add to that that users are provided with visual, auditory, in some instances haptic and olfactory feedback of their performance. So populations within mental health, most of the literature published on VR and mental health focuses on intervention within various types of anxiety, and I think that's what Barbara really related to and focused on. And less attention has been paid to intervening in patients with schizophrenia. So in my talk, I'll try to speak about first about PTSD, but then show you a project that we have with people with schizophrenia. And I should say that within the PTSD, I cannot present a lot of data, and I'm very happy that Barbara came before me so she could present whatever data is in the world. However, in schizophrenia, I think I can show some more data, and it will support some things that we are saying here. So I'm going to start with what's going on in Israel and why do we need, what's the percentages of PTSD, and why do we need, I think, virtual reality for the treatment. So most of the research in Israel on PTSD has been conducted during the period of 2001 to 2006, when terrorism-related attack reached a peak. The number of attacks in 2001 reflected a more than 300% increase relatively to previous years. And I should say that in our situation, no one wins. So I'm presenting one side, but I know that the other side has the same problem. I'm going to skip that because Barbara already spoke about it. So many victims of terrorism display severe emotional reactions even in the absence of physically injured. Some develop post-traumatic stress disorders. And Barbara already said, the symptoms include shock and numbness, fear, anger, and depression. Some victims may even refrain from performing daily occupational or leisure-based activities. And I'm going to focus on it later on. So who is affected by terrorism? People who personally witness or were victim of the terrorism attack. People who have relatives, friends, and acquaintances who were subject to trauma, and people who provide aid and assistance to terror victim. And in Israel, we had two main surveys that were done, and they examined the impact of terrorism on nationally representative population samples and the psychological impact of ongoing terrorism in Israel. Telephone survey was carried out at two time points using a strata sampling method. So what we actually see in the 2003 survey is that more than 45% of Israelis have been exposed to terrorism attack or have friends or relatives who have been exposed. However, in 2006, as you can see in the first, I can Can you see that? Okay. In the first category here, no personal exposure or no exposure, the percentage are higher than it was in 2003. But that doesn't tell us the full picture yet. So frequencies of PTSD and ASD symptoms, you can see that the avoidance and numbing are the highest percentage. And the percentage at 2006 are really very, very similar. So one main thing that has to be said is that 9% that manifested PTSD symptoms in 2003, and this rate remains consistent when it's 9.4 at the second time of the... So what I'm saying actually, that we do have a lot of PTSD clients and that we have to treat. So what are the therapeutic approaches? And already Barbara spoke about them, but you know, you cannot give a lecture and not say the other things. So of course there are many other approaches, and I think that we are here using the exposure therapy with virtual reality. And I would like to just add one thing to that, that within the exposure therapy, we are actually trying to get the client to imagine what happened to him. And some clients are unable to do that. And I'm sure you know that better than me. And here comes the virtual reality and helps us. Okay, so this again, it's just a smaller view, and I'll do it very... And we should say that the first... You know, we are talking here more PTSD, but the first virtual reality were on phobias. Barbara was involved in that too. And then Barbara already presented her things. And just to speak about the study that Joanne DeFiddy has, so she has the study on the World Trade Center. And that's how I got involved in it. I was in a conference, and that was in 2001, or in 2002, I'm sorry, and Joanne presented it, and I said to myself, you know, Americans, they had the first big attack, and here already they have the technology, and it's all in place, and people are starting to do it, and we Israelis, we have attacks for many years, and we didn't yet start anything. So I came back home, I emailed Joanne and Hunter Hoffman, and that's how we started our project. Okay, so this is, of course, the New York, and I'm going to show you the movie. Okay, so just to say that don't think that in virtual reality you show that movie as it is. Of course, that's within that computer, and you can do it gradually. Whenever the patient is ready, he can start and do it, and you can go by levels. You start with something that is, you just see the picture, and then you go on and on whenever he's ready to do more things, and you can show him the full picture, not only visually but auditory. I'm going to stress that auditory thing because that's very, very important, and we have seen in research that maybe that's the main impact on what's going on in the person's brain or how he really recovers. Okay, so from here, I'm going to argue that most of what we are... So the main thing that usually a psychotherapist and psychologist are looking at is how much is the anxiety reduced, or how much is the depression decreased? And those are the main thing, and those are usually the main assessments that we are using in therapy. And my point here to argue is that it's not enough. We have to look at what the person is able to do after he has gone through the therapy. It's not enough to know that his anxiety is less. We want to know that he went back to whatever his occupations were before he was diagnosed with PTSD or before he was in that attack. Okay, so I'm here showing actually the essence of occupation. And I want to say that the main focus is on occupational performance, or the intersection point for the person, the environment, and what the person wants and needs to do. And later on, I'll describe a tool that we are using in order to see what the person did before and after therapy. Okay, so just to say that in this project, we actually have worldwide collaborators. I already said that I emailed Hunter Hoffman, so, and he's from Seattle, so you know he's involved in that. And we have Azu Garcia from Spain, and there are two of us from the University of Haifa, and our therapist is actually from Jerusalem, from Hadassah Hospital. And the research team members have diverse background that draw from the major disciplines of psychotherapy, psychology, occupational therapy, technology, computer science, and programming. Okay, so the first objective of our, when we just started, was to design and build a simulation of terrorism, suicide, bus bombing attack in Israel. We chose bus bombing because in 2002, that was the main thing that happened in Israel. I'm sure everybody is aware of how many bus attacks we had in Israel. So we had a master's student, and she just took pictures, nice pictures of Haifa. This is an example of it. And then we took many pictures of what happened in those bus attacks. And we had a lot of movies and things that we got from the media. Of course, they allowed us to use it, and we got all the permission for that. So Barbara already showed you some screenshots of what we have within our virtual bus bombing, which was actually developed and built in Seattle. We send everything to there, and they send us back. And we had some very interesting things while they're putting all the notes upside down in Hebrew, and the other things that we had to send them back and forth, like the sirens that I'll show you in our program. It sounds to us like European sounds. It wasn't at all like the Israeli ones, but we have accomplished it. Okay. Doesn't work. No. Yeah. Okay, I guess I'll have to show it from the... It worked this morning. The whole thing is stuck, so... Mouse itself is stuck.
Well, the computer is.
Yeah, okay. The whole computer is stuck. Okay, those are the things that you really don't look for, but. It's running.
Everything's running.
So, let's try it again.
What happens when you use technology?
Yes. It's a...
Which one is yours?
While they're figuring it out, I'll tell you, because when we're using virtual reality,
I think, yes, Naomi.
Computer glitches. Okay. And so very often what we'll do
let me do that in a minute.
Well, just don't close.
Okay.
Well, can you close this one?
To close it, you think? No, I'm going to open that and show there, and then I'll go back there. Okay, I hope it will work, and I'll show it from here. Those are voices in Hebrew, shouting, asking for help. To walk again.
Ben, si gèle, okay. Mais êtes-vous capable d'y retourner à l'intérieur?
Ce qui arrive, c'est que dès qu'on quitte ça, on perd tout contrôle. C'est un peu.
So we have to start the computer again?
I think we have to reboot the computer.
Wow. Windows, là. Everybody knows.
At least it's. Okay, it will take a few minutes, so if you want to ask something, I don't know, I didn't present too much to ask questions, but... Anybody? Okay.
Oops. Okay, voulez-vous essayer de le redémarrer pour voir? This could apply to Dr. Rothbaum's presentation as well.
Okay.
You mentioned you were using clips from the media that you based your video recreation on. But wouldn't using actual clips from the media provide more of a realistic exposure? I know you want to be able to vary the time of day and different aspects of the video, but I'm just thinking there are so many videos of the two planes hitting the Twin Towers. And
no. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so that's the...
So it's got to be 3D.
Right. It has to be 3D, and it has to be very immersed. So it's not the same. Another thing is, of course, that when you use virtual reality, you can control it, okay? The client can control it, and you as a therapist can control it. And that's the main thing. When a person looks at watches a video, he's really watching it from the beginning to the end, or he can stop it at one point, but he cannot go back. While in virtual reality, you can decide that in one session, you are showing the same thing. Let's take the bus. I know that one of our clients had to see just the bus coming from the corner. He couldn't even see it, you know, driving to the stop, to the station, about four or five sessions, okay? So it's completely different from what you're talking about a video. Okay? Am I clear about it? So I'll just...
Well, it just seems that a video creation is as 3D as a... video from the news. No?
No. Okay, I'll just continue and I'll do that very fast because many people already spoke about all these measures, and I'll just speak about one measure, which is the activity card sort that I told you before that I'm going to elaborate on. So this is what it looks like. Those are... Okay, so it requires adults to sort 80 cards that depict activities in which they typically engage. The sorting of pictures of people actually engaged in activity prompts the person to recall the presence of activity in his or her life, allows client to describe the impact that an illness has had on their activities, and reflects the percentage of retained activities as an indicator of occupational engagement. So those cards are actually, you can categorize them into four different categories. One is the instrumental activity of daily living, IADL. The second one is the social activities. And you can see here the grandmother telling a story. And the leisure, low physical demand. And the leisure, high physical demand. And right here, I'll try and show you an example of a PTSD client and how he rated himself before the therapy. So here is the shopping, which is an IADL. So he said, I've done it previously, and I'm beginning to do it again. This is 4 months after his attack. And here again, he's giving the same answer. I'm beginning to do it again. And that's social activities. However, when it comes to leisure, he says, I gave up due to the illness. And he told us that he used to take, that was one of his main hobbies, to take pictures. And again, for a leisure high demands, going out for dancing, he stopped doing it or he gave up due to the illness. Okay, so what we see from that client is that he is now have only 45% current activity performance on IADL. He has 24% current activity on social activities, 50% on leisure low physical, and 19% on leisure high physical. So overall, he has only 33% current activity performed. Okay, so again, for the treatment protocol, I'll do it first because it's very similar to what Barbara was talking before. So we are based on the, of course, of the prolonged exposure, and the focal component of the program, prolonged exposure to traumatic memories, is usually conducted by priming imagination. I said it before. We implement the virtual reality to provide prolonged exposure, and treatment duration is based upon the therapist's judgment, and the minimum consists of 10 to 15 sessions per weekly. And this is again what Barbara already said, so I'm not going to talk about it, just to say that we are giving our client a DVD at the end of the session so he can do the homework through that DVD. And we really emphasize on what he's doing in vivo. So let's say he was in a bus, we ask him to go to a bus station. That's the most he can do at the beginning. Later on, we ask him to really, you know, enter a bus, drive on a bus, whatever, and I'll show you some examples of it. Okay, so let's hope this one will work. You can see from his movement, he's really not looking at the bus. He's trying to look under and like just see the view and not the bus itself. Okay. So he knows there is something over there, but he's not going to touch it. He can't yet touch it. Okay, so our first project was an analog study to look at the severity of trauma when we use the bus world. And the objective was to investigate the subjective responses of healthy individuals to this virtual environment. And we had 30 participants, and the mean age was 40.2. And here are the exclusion criteria. And the instrument that we used is the PDS, and then we used an SFK. The SFK is a tool that we use a lot in virtual reality, and what we actually want is to get the person's feedback on what he felt within that environment, and I'll elaborate on that when I show the results. And the SADS, which is using in each treatment anyway. And of course, we had our environment in which we used only stage one, which is a street scene, bus stop, no bus yet, okay? The stage two was bus arrived at stop but does not explode. The third one was bus explodes with fire and smoke. no sound. And the highest one was the full scenario when you hear whatever I showed you here at the end, that's the full scenario of what you can see and especially what you can hear. Okay, immediately following each exposure, the participants were asked to rate their SADS and to complete the SFQ. All subjects had average of 1.1, when 87% was in low range of symptoms and 13 in a moderate range of symptoms. And here are the results, and what we can see is and especially with the realism and the presence, is that on the fourth stage, which is the highest one, you can see that anxiety really increased. So significant difference in a sense of being in environment between the four stages of exposure, and we see increase in sense of being in the environment, decrease in feeling of control, increase in percent in perceptions that environment is realistic, and no differences regarding feedback and discomfort. And this is the SADS, also what they said, the subjective unit of distress. And just to summarize those results, so performance experience, participants felt comfortable, and they had only few side effects. And a significant effect by exposure in the subjective presence and the SADS, we saw anxiety significantly increased with the severity of exposure. So when we concluded that study, that was before we started our real trial, we said that there is a potential to provide graded exposure with that bus bombing, provides initial validity of the simulated environment, and the results suggest that sounds may play an important role in successful elicitation of emotional response during VRE. Okay, so now I'm going to just speak about one case, not more than that, but this one was in Jerusalem just last July. A Palestinian construction worker attacked a woman and infant in a car, ramming the plow of his bulldozer into their windshield while also flipping two loaded public buses on their sides and trapping the civilians' passengers inside. He continued to crushing several more cars before being apprehended and shot by a SWAT officer. The results were three women were killed and dozens injured, and a number of survivors and witnesses to the attack have since sought treatment for PTSD. So here is our patient. He's 30 years old. He's male, he's married, and has college education. No previous psychiatric history. And currently, he was diagnosed with PTSD, major depressive episode, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. He had 12 sessions, treatment protocol. Some sessions involved imaginal exposure, some VR exposure, and one session involved exposure to photos. And I took that case because I think it's very important to say that you don't have to be very strict. Sometimes if you feel that it's better for the client, and as a therapist you might feel that, you have to really be more open to do other things too. For VR sessions, in the presence of a therapist, and this is Dr. Sarah Friedman, the patient viewed the virtual bus world in a VR helmet from a viewpoint of a sidewalk next to a cafe across the street from the bus stop. The patient could look around the virtual world by moving his head. The therapist treated the patient via VR-graded exposure, showing the patient first a bus stop with no bus, then gradually at the next level, a bus approach to the stop, and already I showed you the picture, so you know what it looks like. And here are some scores of this client. And the results show that depression and PTSD symptoms, as measured by the DEC, were reduced by 83%. The CAPS and other measures indicated a large reduction in PTSD symptoms after completion of the sessions. And I should say that that was also after a month. We already re-interviewed him, and we got even a reduction from what I'm reporting here. And after completion treatment, the patient no longer met criteria for PTSD, major depression, or any other psychiatric disorder upon examination using those standardized. On the last session, the patient said, "Every day I pass by the place of the attack at least twice. I think of what happened and continued on my way. This week, for the first time since the attack, I went on the same bus I took when the attack happened. I sat on the unsafe side and said to myself, I'm doing this and everything is all right." Okay. So what is the future of PTSD and the virtual reality within PTSD? Some percentage of clients go on internet to look for support groups and help. And I had to somehow combine it to this conference. So that's why I'm saying it. Others still need an individual therapist with whom they can form trust relationship. And latest surveys suggest that patients with PTSD are much more receptive to receiving VRE therapy than to traditional therapy. So with this line of change in traditional therapy, it seems that VR will be integrated sometime in the future. It might be very soon, I don't know, within internet-based intervention in the future. And now I'm going to move into my second presentation, or half of the presentation, where I'm going to show you a virtual reality which is done on a desktop computer, and it's for I don't think I have to talk about schizophrenia. Just to give a definition for executive functions. So executive functions are defined as higher order functions that are needed for performing complex or non-routine tasks. And of course, it's the ability of planning, of maintaining attention, of avoiding and interfering stimuli, the capacity to multitasking, and cognitive behavioral flexibility. Executive functions and IADL. So lately, research showed relationship between executive functions and performance of IADL in clients with schizophrenia. So the rationale is, in order to effectively evaluate executive functions, it is recommended to use complex functional tasks. Berger stated that importance of using ecologically valid assessment for evaluating executive functions. There are not enough opportunity to evaluate people in functional setting due to a lack of time and resources. Using a functional virtual environment can provide a solution of those problems. So in this study, we had 60 subjects, 30 with schizophrenia and 30 controls, and although it looks the ages are different, there is no significant difference between them. And we have three subgroups of the schizophrenia clients that we can talk about. Virtual supermarket, you actually need to purchase 7 items. And what we saw was that clients, some of them were able to do it, but 10 of them were unable to do it And the standard deviation between them was very big on how many purchases did you do. So we actually divided them into the three sub-groups that I'm showing here, and I'll explain it later on again. So the measures that we used were the behavioral assessment of this executive syndrome and the virtual supermarket, which I'm going to show in a minute. So that's the behavioral assessment of this executive syndrome. And it has some subtests, and I'm going to move into the Israeli VAPS that was originally developed by and designed by Evelyn Klinger, and it was in France. So we had to adapt it to the Israeli environment, and we just changed the wording so it will be applied to the Israeli. So the task is to purchase 7 items from a list showed on the right-hand side of the screen, to proceed to the cashier desk to pay. And it's a first-person perspective, and the navigation is by keyboard or by joysticks. So within the assessment session, the user selects an item by using the mouse, and then the items appear in the shopping cart and disappear from the icon. And you can already see it on the screen over here. Once he chose something, it disappears. The computer records the position, the time, and the action that the person did. So in the administration, what we do is we give a training session. It's very similar to the assessment itself, with different items to purchase. Instructions are provided both verbally and as notes on the screen. And then we have the assessment itself. And upon completion, both client and therapist can watch the process of purchasing the items and the results. And I'll show you that in a minute. And we have 8 outcome measures, which actually go by temporal and the meters, how much he went within the supermarket, and did he complete or did not complete his task. So what you see here is the trajectory. So once the client finishes his task, both, as I said, both client and the therapist can see exactly his trajectory within the supermarket. The red dots are the points where he stopped to purchase something, and we see exactly the order of the things, how he purchased it. Now I'm going to show you 2 different pictures of that trajectory. While the first one, the upper one, is a control one, which you see he goes very smoothly. He knows exactly what he wants to do, and he purchases the items. On the other, one, which is actually a client with a Parkinson, you can see that he goes back and forth all the time. He has no plan how to go and purchase those 7 items that he needs. So he goes back and forth, and you can see also the red dots, how many times he had to stop, and he stopped, which were a mistake. Okay, so shortly to show you the results. I know that I'm short with time here. So those are the results on the beds. And as I said before, we already divided our clients into 4 groups, actually into 3 groups and the controls. So you can see here that the control, I'm sorry, the one, it's very hard to see it, but I'll follow that with my mouse here. So actually the controls and those that purchased 6 and 7 items were quite the same, while those that didn't purchase anything, there were clients that came into the supermarket, they had no idea, although they did the training and whatever, they had no idea what they have to do. So those are showing really very bad scores on the beds, on the test of executive functions. And here are the results of the VAPS. And although the control group covered a smaller distance, a significant difference was not found between them and the group that purchased 6 and 7 items. And the total time of performance, participants who purchased most of the items spend more time in the supermarket. The differences are significantly between all groups in the number of correct actions, and no significant difference were found for incorrect actions. And the number of pauses, all the groups that did purchase item had similar number of stops. And I think that's my last one. Significantly, differences were found between both control and the 6-7 purchase group to those that didn't purchase anything. Okay, so in conclusion, the VAPS significantly differentiated between persons with schizophrenia and control. Results of this study support the use of the VR environment, specifically the VAPS, to assess executive functions among persons with schizophrenia. Results point to the possibility that the VAPS can not only differentiate between groups but also between persons within schizophrenia who experience mild impairment in executive functions versus more severe impairments. And I thought about this project to present this project again because I think we have to look at what people are doing on their everyday life and how they are able to really accomplish what each of us has to do. So I would like to thank you. This is a sunrise in Israel. Take questions now or later.
Great work. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you think that this work could...
Great work. Congratulations. Do you think that we could use your model to develop skills with other type of patients, like mentally impaired people, and training to do the grocery is quite a complex task. Would you see other application?
Sure. First, I would like to say that I showed here only the part of the schizophrenia, but we actually did it on people with stroke, people with MCI, which is mild cognitive impairment, and those people are really coming to the doctor at one stage and complaining that they have a problem. Usually, what the doctor or the psychologist or the neuropsychologist will do is check their memory. And the memory can be perfect. Yeah. So they say you have nothing. Yeah. So here we are showing that executive function is actually a main component that you have to check for, and through that virtual supermarket we were able to show, and as I said, I just showed the part of the schizophrenia, we were able to show that it's not only that it discriminates between clients, but it was able to predict to what category they belong. So since we do have, and we have a large database on that, since we do have 3 populations already, I would think that you can use it with other populations as well.
Great job.
Thank you.